This week on The Photographer's Perspective, I interview Michael Shane Bloom. We're here at PhotoPills Camp in Menorca, Spain, and we're going to talk landscape and time-lapse photography. I've been fortunate to work alongside some of the world's most inspiring photographers. I've watched how they've helped others at our conferences and transform the way they see through the lens. Welcome, I'm your host, Chris Smith, founder of Out of Chicago. This is F8, The Photographer's Perspective, the show where we have candid conversations and go in-depth with the pros to get to know them better. Join us each week as we discuss photography, get to know their personal perspectives, and introduce you to new places and experiences, helping you get the most out of your creative passion. All right, I'm here in Menorca, Spain, with landscape photographer, time-lapse photographer, however you'd say that, Michael Shane Bloom. What a pleasure to have you, Michael.
Hey, thanks so much. It's awesome to be here. We have a beautiful day today in Menorca, Spain. We're just sitting up here by the hotel pool. Gorgeous views. Good place to have a conversation.
Exactly. Yeah. A couple of drinks.
Of course.
Cheers. cheers. So we're here for PhotoPills Camp. Michael is one of the masters. This morning he gave a presentation on how he does his time-lapse photography. And I don't really know how to say this, but kind of crazy, probably the best time-lapse photographer in the world just sitting here with me. This is really cool to have you with us. Thank you.
That's a huge compliment. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
that's,
no, I mean, just the stuff that you do is amazing, and the landscape photography. I don't know how you do it. And you've been doing a ton of new stuff lately too. You got a new YouTube channel going, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, how many episodes do you have out now on the YouTube channel?
Well, you know what? I've uploaded YouTube videos for quite a long time. I think my first one maybe was even 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really take YouTube very seriously, and I just decided I wanted to start releasing more regular videos on there, behind the scenes tutorials, more time-lapse, more aerial videos. So I've been trying to set myself up to do one every 2 weeks. And I have so far 4 episodes of my Capturing New Zealand kind of behind the scenes vlog series, which goes through the process of how I do the time-lapses and seascape photography, waterfall photography, just a good variety of stuff. And it's just a really fun adventure. And then in between, I also released a vlog with my good friend, Nick Page.
Yeah, we love Nick Page. Yeah, one of our instructors for sure.
He's an awesome guy. And we went to Death Valley, spent a day over there just capturing some really cool time lapses and photography. So I think, let me think here, about five behind-the-scenes videos so far, and I'll be putting out more in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I said this to you a minute ago, and, there's so many good YouTube channels out there that have so much information, but sometimes, and you actually, you see some people out there, and they give great advice, and then their pictures are pretty good, and yours are just phenomenal. And I think the most impressive part to me is that you can go to a location. Like, where were you? Was it New Zealand where you had the one with the kind of spherical rock and then the fountain coming off of the rock, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like you were there for months to get this thing. Like, you were there in the moment, got an amazing shot. Same thing in Death Valley. Some of the best landscape photos I've ever seen that you got in the dunes there when you were there with Nick. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to get the teaching and the explanation behind it, but then to get these amazing photos and see really how a pro does it, that's what's so great about YouTube nowadays, I think.
Yes, it's really challenging. I found that a lot of the times with the behind-the-scenes videos, I would have to record what I was doing before actually taking the photos or time-lapses, or record what I did afterwards. I found that in the moment, it was very difficult to actually shoot photography and try and record these videos. A little easier with the time lapse because I could let the time lapse start running, and then while the time lapse is capturing what it was capturing, I could start explaining what the process was. So a little easier for the time lapse than it was for the photography. But yeah, as far as the trips go, I like a variety, so I love it when you plan out shots for a long period of time and you finally, your vision finally becomes reality. And it might take 10 to 20 to 30 trips to get that one shot you were looking for, the one shot that you had planned out and scouted. But of course, having that flexibility to be spontaneous and just kind of go with the moment, go with the weather, I think that's what happened in New Zealand. I mean, I had never been there before, and just a really inspiring place to be. I'm sure being there, if I was there for another month or two, I would have kept exploring those compositions and still found some interesting things to capture. But I think in that short period of time being there, I was actually pretty happy with the results that I got. But to be honest, in that one vlog with the seascapes and the rocks, I wasn't even sure if that sunrise was going to work out. I mean, I ended up getting 3 or 4 photos that morning. Usually when I go out and shoot a seascape, I'm lucky if I get one photo. So that was a rare morning for me.
Okay, I was going to say, because I'm like, these are, you know, I mean, I've done photography for a while, and I see 4 photos here that are better than my very best, and you're doing it all in one morning or whatever. It's pretty impressive. It's crazy. So, you know, I think the other great thing about YouTube is that, you know, I've been following you for a long time, followed your work and seen all the time lapses and that. But I'm not even sure, you know, before a couple of months ago, I knew exactly what you look like. And so, you know, the YouTube, not only do you see what you look like and see in action, but you get the whole personality to it as well, which is a whole different perspective to the whole thing.
For sure. It's nice to put a face to the artwork, and for myself included. You know, it's fun. For example, I love being at PhotoPills because, you know, I've talked with a lot of these photographers. I consider them friends. I've talked with them for years and years online, and to be able to meet in person and have real conversations in person, there's nothing that can beat that. I mean, sure, you can have a Skype meeting. Sure, you can have a phone call. Sure, you can text somebody through Facebook or whatever, but nothing beats actually being in a place with the people that you know.
Well, that's what makes it so great for the attendees too. Yeah. You know, for the attendees to say, hey, I've watched Nick Page, I've watched Michael Shanebloom on YouTube, whatever it is, and now to actually sit down and interact and get to know them better, that's what makes these types of events so special.
For sure. Yeah. I absolutely love the collaborative process there and the fact that there's so many incredible people to learn from, and each person has their own individual process. It's so special, and it's just as special for, I think, the educators as it is the attendees, because we really get to hang out and spend time with you know, a lot of these people I've considered friends for a long time and have just never had the opportunity to travel all the way across the world to meet them. So it's a very cool experience.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So this morning you were given your class on time lapse. You went through all the settings. You went through all the tips you give for time lapse. I don't know. Can you give people 1 or 2 nuggets from the presentation this morning or maybe like what situations are you looking to do time lapse as opposed to just taking stills?
I wish I could put together a formula of what it is, but sometimes it's just the feeling of a place. A lot of the times it's my own mood. You know, there's moments where I don't feel like capturing time lapse. I feel like going around with my camera and my tripod and capturing landscape photography. And then there's other times where I feel more inspired by the motion that's happening around me. I want to capture that through a time lapse. Different situations will allow for different possibilities. Of course, there's, for example, shooting seascapes on the beach. Generally, I'll opt to shoot seascape landscape photography rather than time lapse. But then if I see an incredible rainbow forming in the distance over a mountain, oh, I got to get that in a time lapse, you know. And I'll shoot stills of it as well, but my main focus for that might be shooting a nice in motion time lapse. You know, other advice though, as far as the presentation and thinking back to the things that I said during that presentation, I think the takeaway is really, one of the big takeaways was to keep it simple and to not get overwhelmed. Don't run before you walk. A lot of people, they get very excited by the time lapses and they want to run out and buy a time-lapse motion slider with a pan and tilt head, and they want to do every shot needs to be a day-to-night shot, showing all the different light, using all these advanced techniques. And, you know, what I wanted to show people is a lot of great time lapses don't have to be that complex. A lot of my favorite time lapses I've ever shot were just on a tripod, no motion gear, manual settings, maybe even a quick shot, like only running it for 10 to 15 minutes. One of my recent, well, not super recent, but one film that I did, a 4-minute time lapse of the Dolomites in Italy. The whole film is just static tripod shots. There's no motion equipment at all. And every single shot was done on manual. There's no day-to-night shots. There's no exposure ramping or anything advanced. And it's one of my favorite videos I've ever done. It's just the compositions. It's the mood. It's the feeling. It's the light. The music and the flow of it. It's definitely one of my favorites, and it's actually one of my most simple that I've ever created. So I really wanted to share that with people and say, hey, look, you know, all this gear is great. All these advanced techniques are great, but, you know, you'd be surprised how much you can create with just simple techniques. And really, at the end of the day, it's about the composition, the light, and about the story. And that's the same thing as time lapse as it is in landscape photography or in any other art that somebody wants to pursue. It's about that story, the composition. So yeah, I think that's the biggest thing I wanted to share with people.
Yeah, I'm thinking that if you're a landscape photographer and you're into this, it's just like one extra step to go ahead and create the time lapse also. But then that actually makes me wonder, like, is there anything you do different for a composition if you are doing a time lapse than you do for landscape? Or would you take, like, hey, here's my landscape and that's the picture, and I do the exact same thing for a time lapse?
I would say it definitely depends on the subject.
Although the first thing, sorry, that comes to mind is you're always going to shoot them horizontal, like landscape.
True, yeah. Generally, you are looking for that wider perspective, 16:9 aspect ratio, sometimes even wider to get more of a cinematic look, like a more theatrical aspect ratio. As far as changing the compositions, time-lapse to photos, I like to think of them in the same way. I mean, the same basic principles apply, right? Simplifying the frame, minimalism, symmetry, balancing the ratios of land to sky, all the same basic rules. I say rules, but, you know, rules is such a stupid word for
just the things you do for your regular photos. It's a lot of the same, right?
It is a lot. There's a lot of similarities in finding patterns and shapes and just accentuating what you want to showcase in the photograph or in the time lapse. I mean, what's the most interesting thing? And how can we show that in the best way possible? But the differing thing between time-lapse and photos is it really is about the motion in a time-lapse. I mean, motion is the most important key part of a time-lapse. And with still imagery, you don't necessarily need motion in certain areas of the photograph to make it interesting. You could most of your composition could be rocks in a landscape photo, and it could be your favorite photo you've ever taken, but unless there's changing light on those rocks or some sort of motion, that probably wouldn't work as well for a time lapse. So let's say I'm out in the Southwest and I'm shooting landscape photography and I find this incredible rock formation, these beautiful patterns, and maybe I find a really nice sky to accentuate those patterns in the foreground. That could work really great for the landscape photo, but then when I do a time lapse of it, I might need to adjust my camera and focus more on the movement that's happening in the sky rather than the foreground. But of course, it depends. If you have changing light on the foreground, that could look amazing too. But really, it comes down to the word motion. What is the motion in the scene that you're trying to capture? Is it the shadows moving? Is it the clouds? Are there people scurrying around or cars? And you fixate on that piece of motion that you want to showcase, and then you build your composition around that motion. So that would be the differing thing. But the nice thing is I have shot some time lapses where it was the exact composition I would do as a still. And then I could use a still frame from the time lapse for my own photography. And I've done that many times.
And pick the one that you want.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So you do a lot of work for big companies. You have a lot of different clients. When you're doing time lapses, are you like commissioned by these companies a lot of times? Or is it more that you put all these things out and they come to you for a license? How does that typically work for you?
I'd say it's even split between the two. Sometimes I'll do a personal project, and for whatever reason, a company would want to use that footage. And sometimes it's less. Sometimes it's less expected. I did like some abstract time lapses a while ago, and a lot of companies have come to me to license that abstract footage, whereas I would have never thought any company would want any of that stuff.
Right.
But yeah, sometimes I'll do personal projects around different places, cities, landscapes, and then clients will come to me wanting to license that footage for their own projects. And that's always nice because the footage
is already
there.
Done. Yeah.
Yeah, it's already shot. And in general, a lot of the times I'm just flattered that they want to use something that I worked on. You were doing it for yourself. Yeah, I did it for myself. I was passionate about it, and I wanted to just create a project that I could be proud of, and then these companies want to use it for their projects. I think that's pretty cool, and then, of course, it's always nice when somebody wants to commission a project and send me out somewhere, and I can capture original content for them.
What kind of things would they want? Hey, we need some San Francisco scenes, we need some time lapse of this park or something.
All sorts of stuff. I've shot San Francisco for multiple companies. I've done like when the Super Bowl was in San Francisco, I captured the city with all the Super Bowl lights, and I did that for so that they could play time lapses in between segments of the Super Bowl. Capturing the city. I think I've captured the city for Apple for one of their opening stores in downtown. But you know what? Even beyond capturing the scenic stuff, I've also done time lapses at Sundance Film Festival for the theaters filling up and for the events going on. I've done time lapses for like a sunglass, or not a sunglasses company, it's like an eyeglass company, like optics company, and I went to their factory and filmed the whole process.
Oh, I bet.
We put, GoPros inside the machines and did all that. So, I've done a pretty wide variety of things where somebody will reach out and say, hey, we want a time-lapse of this, and I'll actually be like, oh, wow, I didn't even think of just time-lapsing that, but that could be really interesting. And then, beyond that, I'll do commission projects for photography and for video as well. But yeah, time lapse is a fun one. It's a random thing to do, but it is a lot of fun.
And are most of these companies finding you through a search and then it comes up that this is the guy, or is it like word of mouth amongst these, like, hey, if you want the guy to do this, this is your guy?
Yeah, I think I haven't pinpointed exactly where people will find me from. I think there is a decent amount of word of mouth. Like if I'll do a project for a client and then they'll maybe refer me to another person. I think that is probably the most valuable way of getting your name out there in doing commercial work, is you have to put the work in and get the people in the industry excited with what you're doing. Of course, SEO on websites and social media, and that's all great, but it doesn't really mean anything until you actually go produce projects for clients that you can show them and that they can share with other colleagues. I mean, that's probably the most beneficial thing, I would say. And that's probably where I've gotten most of my jobs. If I was to pinpoint, like, doing a project for somebody, that project went great, doing another project for somebody who knew them or a similar company or the same company, repeat clients. But of course, I've gotten projects from social media, people finding me through Instagram and Facebook and YouTube and Vimeo and my website as well. People just Google time lapse.
Right, yeah.
I've popped up in different ways. So I think it's good to have a variety. And I wish I did have the analytics to pinpoint exactly where everything came from, but I think it's just a variety of different things, I would say.
Yeah, I feel like you're doing well enough that you don't need the analytics. Just let it keep going the way it's going.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So if someone's interested in getting into this themselves, and I think probably a big part of it is that you're able to produce, that you do a good job for these people, and you must be easy to work with. You're able to meet deadlines and things like that and are professional about it. More important than even possibly the quality of the time lapse sometimes, yes or no? Oh, that's a tough one.
That's a tough one. I wouldn't say more important than the quality of the work that you're producing. I think at the end of the day, you know, if you look to people in the industry in Hollywood, they'll work with people who are notoriously known for being difficult, but they're so talented in what they do that it's a sacrifice. But I will say, I think it's equally as important to be flexible, to, of course, be respectful, to work as hard as possible to get the client they're paying you to produce a project. If you just say, well, I don't really care about that, and you just kind of throw them something that works but isn't, you know, it just doesn't leave a very good impression, and it's not very respectful. I mean, they're paying for your time, and, you know, so anytime I go out and produce a project, I like to think of it as if it was my own personal project, and I take it very seriously. If somebody needs, like, if Sundance Film Festival needs time lapses of theaters filling up and they want time lapses of day to night shots around the town and the events, I'm going to act as if it was my own project that I'm super passionate about, because, you know, it's just going to get me better results. It's going to make everyone else happy. At the end of the day, it's kind of selfish if you're not, you know, producing the best quality work you can, because usually working in these projects, you're part of a team. You're an element of a team that's part of a bigger picture, you know? It's like, so if you're not doing your part, you're just dragging the other elements of the team down. So I would hate to be that element.
And, yeah, no, yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to say, like, that you wouldn't. I just know that some people, even when it's just photography or whatever, are like, you know what, I'm going to need 2 more weeks to really make this perfect. It's 99% of the way there, and they're like, you know, I'm not quite there, because they're just trying to be too much of a perfectionist, I guess. I'm not saying you would do poor quality work. I'm just saying that some people, when they're trying to get into it professionally, just try and work too hard and are too much of a perfectionist on the work, when it's just as important to deliver on time and to be professional with the way that you are.
Oh yeah, sorry, I may have misunderstood the question just a little bit. I mean,
I wouldn't want to advise any of our people. Yeah, go ahead and make crappy work.
No, of course not. You know, but I do know people who are just like, it's work, whatever. I'll just, you know. But anyways, no, super important that. You always have to meet the deadline.
I love your take on it. I love that you're saying, like, if someone's going to pay me to do this, then I'm going to treat it like it's my own thing, and I'm going to work just as hard as if I were doing it just for myself. Yeah.
Yeah. There's been moments where what the client was asking for went so far beyond the realistic possibilities and the contract that I had to stand my ground and say, hey, this is not possible. Here's why. Here's my reasoning of why it's not possible. It's logical reasoning. And I need more time for this, or I need, you know, something else. And that has happened a few times. But in general, yeah, I mean, if a client is looking for a deadline and they're expecting a certain quality work, yeah, you have to meet it, or don't promise that you could do that. You know, say that you need, if you need more time, say that you need more time before the project starts. But yeah, that's a tough one. I luckily haven't haven't missed a deadline yet, but I have had a few complications where, you know, we went out on a trip and the weather didn't match up the way it was supposed to. And I explained, you know, before the project, hey, that subject to change due to weather, we might need a few extra days. And then I have to express that to the client. And if it was mentioned beforehand and they understand that, then I haven't had too much of a problem with it. But, you know, yeah, there's so much that goes into it. I would say it can be a little stressful when you're going and shooting something commercially, and there's the pressure of getting the shot. It's a little easier when it is your own personal passion project, and mm-hmm. you have more time. And if you mess something up, you could say, I'll redo it. You don't have that opportunity quite as much when you're shooting something on the spot for a commercial client.
Now, you hear this all the time from people that end up, making photography their profession, that as soon as they went professional, that now their photography is only 10 or 20% of the time. The rest of it is paperwork and trying to get contracts. But I feel like with you, you're putting out so much great stuff. That's not really the case. Yes or no?
I wish. Oh my gosh. I wish. I think if you asked some other people in the industry as well, it's a lot of work. I work on average probably about 12 hours a day to do this, to make this work, this thing with the time lapse and the photos and the video, to make this work and not have to get another job. I work about 12 hours a day, and that work is at least half, probably 75% is paperwork, emails, meetings, website, admin stuff, data management, just, you know, all the things that are not the creative process. And then the rest of it is post-processing images and videos and time-lapse, and then, of course, going out and shooting. But even just the planning for a trip, you know, before you go on a big trip to Norway or New Zealand, even just the planning that goes into a trip like that, all the logistics,
just like booking your flights. I know, like when I'm coming here and it's like, you know, now I want to make sure I'm not screwing this up. It's like, it all takes time, right?
It takes a lot of time. Yeah. So that's also an extra element of it. I mean, the amount of time I've spent on Google Earth scouting locations may outweigh the time I've spent out shooting those locations.
Right.
To be honest. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes for making this a career, I think. Now, don't get me wrong, it's I couldn't imagine doing anything else. It's the thing that I've loved doing for almost my entire life. I couldn't see doing anything else with my life. But when people say to me, oh, it's crazy, you're just out 100% of the time traveling and going and taking pictures and doing the videos,
living the dream.
It's like, oh, I don't say anything, you know, I won't tell them, really, it's just paperwork, but they're,
you can tell them right now on the podcast, all those people that said it, this is your chance.
I guess we pretty much just didn't say it, but, it's still, you know what, all that stuff makes the shooting and the editing and the creative process worth it. The experiences that I get in doing this as a career, all of the other stuff makes it worth it. And if I have to do that for 12 hours a day or 14 hours a day or however long, I'm going to keep doing it.
You know, kind of the nice thing about it too is you're still your own boss, even though you're working for other companies to put together what they want. But it's not like a boss is going to come to you and say, you know what, from now on, you're just going to do wedding portraits is what you'd just say no to that. Or if all of a sudden you didn't want to do a certain thing, you could say no to all those jobs. So that part's, I mean, that's how I feel with what I've been doing compared to teaching high school. You know, it's like, yeah, when I was teaching high school and the principal says, we've implemented a new thing and you're going to have to do this for 5 minutes during every single class. And it's like, do I have any choice over that? You got no choice over that at all. And at least now it's like, you know what, I'm sick of doing this. We're going to cut that. And you know, so that's got to still be a good part to it.
Yeah, it's, you know what it is, though? I've never known anything else.
So talk about that real quick. You've been doing this, I think I read somewhere, since you were 16?
Yeah. Well, not the time-lapse, not the landscape photography, but I have only ever done photography as a career. When I was 16, like most kids, I applied to a whole lot of jobs, and no one hired me for anything. So I started doing little photography projects here and there. I would start, you know, photographing concerts, senior portraits, events, weddings, all sorts of stuff, action sports. And that's how I started earning money. That was my first job. That was the first time I ever got paid to do something. And that carried on through high school, college, and now here I'm still doing this, essentially the same thing, just slightly different. I've never known anything else. I've always done this. It's always been, you know, myself just finding the projects, doing it freelance, essentially. And so I wouldn't know any other way of doing it. And I think I would be really bad in another setting, to be honest. But it is really enjoyable. There's the cons, of course. The biggest con is procrastination, I think, when you're your own boss. It's sometimes I'm not the best boss to myself. Sometimes I need to work and I'll be like, I'm gonna take a break and do nothing for a while, and I realize, wow, that time that I spent doing nothing, I really shouldn't have done that. I should have been filling out emails in the time that I took that break. But it's kind of all I've ever known. So I think I'm pretty, not only pretty happy with it, but, you know, can manage it in a decent way. I just through the experience of it. But yeah, it's such a weird thing, landscape photography as a career, and time lapse and video and all that. It's a very odd way to make a living. Like when I tell people, you know, if I'm at an event or something, and I'm meeting new people, and what do you do? Well, you know, I work in sales. What do you do? I'm a doctor. What do you do? I'm a landscape photographer. It always gets a little bit of like that funny kind of expression, like a, huh? It's a, what is that? What does that really mean? What do? So you take pictures.
So you make money somehow?
So you take pictures of rocks and trees and people are paying you for that? So how's that work?
Yeah, how's that going for you?
Yeah, it's always
very well, yeah.
It's always such a funny conversation. You know what I've been telling people, and I guess this is semi-true, I find that it's easier to say, I'm a travel photographer. I just go travel. I'm a travel photographer. That often gets a little less of a question mark.
Yeah, that makes sense. So the people are listening to this right now, and they're saying, you know, I'm not sure that I want to lead the Michael Shane Bloom life now that I know, you know, it's not all it's cracked up to be here. But on the other hand, to come to something like Photo Pills Camp here, essentially it's like a fantasy camp or whatever. It's like they get to lead this life that you have and just do the good parts of it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's part of what makes it so much fun.
F8, the Photographer's Perspective, is brought to you by Out of Chicago. Out of Chicago brings together passionate enthusiasts with world-class photographers all in one epic location where you learn and shoot side-by-side with the pros. Since 2014, we've organized hands-on photography conferences in Chicago, New York City, Moab, and more. We are all photographers ourselves, so we understand what it takes to be inspired, get to the right place at the right time, and live our best creative life.
When someone's at an event like this, what are the things you can really help them with? You've got all sorts of, and you can tell people more about them if you want, but you got a lot of tutorial videos online that people can buy. But what can you help people with here that you can't do in your YouTube channel, that you can't do, in those tutorials?
Yeah, you know, the tutorials are really fun, but of course, when you listen to a video tutorial, it's going to be a little bit more impersonal. And if you have questions, you have to then send an email and get an email back. It's a lot different than if you're teaching somebody on the spot and they're having problems with composition. They're trying to work out a composition, and you can be hands-on and help them out and, you know, help move their camera and help them see what the composition, what the possibilities are. It's just, I'm definitely that way, where I'm more of a visual learner, and I'm really good at learning through experience. And sometimes that's been, you know, that's been failing through the experience. Like, I've had to fail a bunch to succeed. And usually once I fail enough times, I'm like, all right, I think I got it this time, you know? Right. So I think that, in situations like this, where it's very hands-on, this is the type of place where I would learn the best. I think if I listened to an audio file of somebody explaining something, or I read a photography book, I don't think I would get any information out of it, because it's just not the way that I learn. So yeah, having that personal touch and being able to talk to all these different instructors and listen to these different seminars that all cover different varieties of topics and different techniques. I mean, I can't think of another way of getting this much information in this, not just getting the information, but having this kind of experience with it as well. I mean, at the end of the day, of course, we're here to teach and people are here to learn, but we're here to have fun and just have a great experience. And, even just for the people teaching, that's been a huge thing. It's just having a great experience with it all.
Right. And that's what some people have said at our events too, is they're like, I just couldn't believe that the instructors were just as excited to be there as we were, you know, and that's kind of what makes it fun for people.
If we weren't excited to do this stuff, then, you know, I mean, we shouldn't be doing what we're doing. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point of becoming a photographer and doing it as a career, is you have to be super excited about all this stuff.
Yeah.
If you want to try and make a living at it, you know, because there's a whole lot of more practical ways to make money that's more sustainable than
right,
this.
Right.
So the fact that we're all here just enjoying the experience and having fun with it, I mean, that's, you know, yeah.
Yeah. So you've been all over the world. You've been to the greatest locations for landscape photography. And, you know, someone's at home, they go, I want to live this life for 10 days or whatever. Where would you recommend that they go? I want to get the best landscape photography experience. I got money for it. I got 10, 12 days. Fly somewhere. What would you tell someone?
You know, what's funny is there are, of course, so many incredible places on this planet to go capture landscape photography, and pretty much I feel like almost every country has to have something interesting, right? And sometimes those interesting things in landscape photography aren't as obvious. So, you know, capturing, it's hard to pinpoint where my favorite places are. I feel like every trip has offered something unique, something interesting. Usually when somebody asks me, what's your favorite place? I just think back to my most recent trip, because that's the most fresh in my memory. Like, New Zealand for me would be my answer, because I was there recently, and that's the most recent experience and capturing photography. Oh man, I wish I had a great answer for that. Like what would be the best place for somebody to go? But it depends on also different variables of what somebody really enjoys shooting in landscape photography, because I mean, there's so many different styles of landscape photography, so many different subjects to capture, that what's your thing? Is it waterfalls? Do you enjoy waterfalls and forest scenes? Are you more into the mountain stuff? Abstract long exposures, seascapes, I mean, night sky.
Maybe the answer is go to, what is it, michaelshanebloom.com? Is that right? To go there and go through your galleries and to see some of the stuff, and whatever inspires you the most, that's the place that they'd want to go.
Yeah, you know, you could find, you know what I do? And
this is a better question. What do you do when you want to find a new place? That's a better question.
When I want to find an interesting place, I go on Google Earth, and I literally just browse around the map of the world.
Okay.
And I just look around at stuff.
And what are you looking for?
Just anything. Interesting interesting formation shapes, coastal areas with different rocks, and you can go in 3D mode and just kind of zoom around. And, you know, usually if there's something interesting, you might find a pinpoint for it and you can mark it down and write it down for later. And of course, you know, seeing we get to see so many images on social media every single day that, of course, I'd be lying if I said I didn't see a photo every once in a while that made me be like, oh, wow, that's a cool place. I've never even seen that before. It'd be fun to go there. So that happens as well. I don't want to act like every single place I've ever been to was just due to searching around Google Earth. But that is my favorite way of going around and finding interesting stuff. I found some pretty interesting photo locations by just browsing around Google Earth for a while.
You're not talking about just like a top-down view. You're talking about put yourself like in the spot and
give like a 3D view where you can actually see some of the ridges of the mountains and stuff like that. And I think it's such a powerful tool. A lot of my friends and colleagues use it just to scout around for, you know, maybe they know the location they want to go to. Maybe they want to go to a certain mountain, but they're not sure the vantage point. Maybe there's a classic vantage point, but there could potentially be an even more interesting vantage point if you find little rivers or waterfalls or a clearing in a different spot. So, just browsing around, of course, finding inspiration from other photos can be great, but. But yeah, browsing around Google has been super helpful for me. And a lot of the times I've actually just, by the situation, gone to certain places. Like a friend of mine will say, hey, I want to do a trip here. And I say, yeah, let's do it. Whatever. Let's try it out. Why not? I've gone to places where I didn't think I would be super excited to photograph. And then I end up finding out it's just such a, you know, the every place has something unique to offer. So I wouldn't rule any place out. And even for myself, here's a good example. So I was doing a commercial in New Zealand. And New Zealand, of course, you know, is pretty dramatic landscapes. But I think in general, I said to myself, well, I don't know if I need to, that's not at the top of my list of places to go. I've seen tons of images of it. It's very well captured. I'll maybe find something more unique. Or something that I haven't seen as much. And I did my commercial project for about a week, and then there were 2 weeks of personal kind of shooting around the island, and I just had such a blast capturing all these different unique scenes that I had never really seen before, and I just felt like the photos that I had seen didn't really do justice to how great the experience was. And it turned out to be one of my favorite trips I've ever done. And had I not just had that sort of commercial project land and gotten offered that opportunity, I don't know if I would have gone to that place. And of course, other people have said, hey, let's go here. And we go, and without any expectation, there's those situations where, you know, sometimes you just have to say yes to things and be spontaneous with it and be open to new possibilities. And so I've done that as well and had those sort of trips and those moments too, both through just people hiring me to do things and then just friends wanting to do a trip. So yeah, those would be the ways of finding a location. Scout yourself. On using maps and things. Of course, don't be afraid to take a look at some images, maybe some different photographers, see if there's a place you might want to go. Of course, I always discourage with the intention of, you know, going to replicate somebody's images. But, you know, if somebody's images gets you inspired to go somewhere and have your own experience, I think that's great. And then, yeah, if something spontaneous comes up and somebody wants to go somewhere, if it works out with your schedule, just kind of go. Why not? It's something new to see, something new to experience.
Oh, I love that answer. All right, so last question. You've done a lot of great projects. Like you said, you did work, and it was used during the Super Bowl, Sundance Film Festival, all this. What's like the most fulfilling project that you had where it was something you're like excited to do, or maybe you weren't at first, and then by the end you're like, yeah, that was really good. I'm so glad that went the way it went.
I'm definitely proud of the work I put in for a lot of projects. My New York passion project, that video was really important to me because, you know, one of my first experiences getting inspired to go shoot photography was actually my first trip to New York when I was a little kid. I was just so amazed at the experience of going around that city. I'm trying to remember how old I was during that trip, but I was super young, and just all these concrete towers and just the sights and the sounds. I mean, it was so inspiring. And you know, I wasn't a photographer at the time. I didn't have a camera at the time, but I felt inspired, and I felt like that experience kind of shaped my interest in wanting to capture photography. So going back there and being able to recreate that excitement that I experienced through a time-lapse video was huge for me, and took from about 2016 to early 2019 to finish the project and create that video. So that's the most recent thing I've put out that I've been proud of. But of course, I've been proud of other projects for other reasons. And a funny one for me, which isn't a project, and it's not a project, not a commercial. It's actually just an event that I went and did a few years ago, 2015, I think. I was, I'll tell you a funny little story about Adobe, the company. So Adobe licensed some of my night sky images for their elevator doors a long time ago, I think 2013 or 14. But they used those elevator pictures for a while, had my name on it and everything. It was pretty cool. The senior creative director, his name's Russell Preston Brown. Super nice guy, really talented, just a brilliant person. He's just so creative. He really loves photography, all genres of photography. He's just he just appreciates art in general. He sent me a message, and he was like, "Hey," he sent me a picture of the elevator door. He's like, "We licensed this, right? We didn't steal this from you." And I was like, "Oh, of course you licensed it. Yeah, you wouldn't do that." And he's like, "Oh, do you want to come see it and hang out and have lunch?" And so I went down to the Adobe office, had lunch with him, saw the elevator door and took a picture by it, doing a little thumbs up. Pretty cool experience. I was excited, since a lot of my career was built around and shaped through these programs that they made, the software. So we did that, and then while we were having lunch, we were just kind of chatting, and he was like, "Hey, I think I have an idea. It's a crazy idea, but I think it would be cool. I head to Asia for an Adobe Adobe conferences, and I want to bring you with me. And then you're going to do a talk in front of the crowds." And I was like, I don't think that's a very good idea. I'm not a very good public speaker. I get very nervous. You know, I've never spoken in front of maybe more than like 20 people. So I think that, you know, I really appreciate the offer. It's an incredible opportunity. I just don't think it's for me. And he's like, "No, you're going to do great. I promise you, do it. Just, you know, you got to do it. It's going to be great." I was like, I don't know, man, this is a bad idea. Like, if I was you, I'd not be offering this right now. Like, I'm going to freeze up, and you're going to look real bad in front of whoever's putting on this event. And I even asked him, I was like, how many people? Is it like, what, 25, 30, 40? He's like, 500 people. I was like, dude, no. That's such a bad idea. I was just so nervous, and I'm pretty introverted and shy, and another countries. Oh my gosh. So all these ideas were spinning in my head. I was like, I really wanted to do the project, but I was so nervous. And he was like, "Just think about it for a day, come back to me, but I know you'll do it, and you're going to be great, and it's going to be a lot of fun." Sure enough, that night I kind of sat there and had this moment where I was like, okay, you know, I don't know. Should I do this or not? Like, this is the scariest thing I've ever been offered to do, and it just the whole idea of it, I kept running through all the things that could go wrong in my head. Like, I'm standing in front of 500 people and I just blank and freeze and don't know what to say. I was like, that's my worst nightmare. That is a literal nightmare, right? Anyways, I don't know what I was thinking. I said yes. And sure enough, later on, I was on a plane with him to go do presentations in Hong Kong and in Singapore. And I was just so terrified the entire plane ride there. I still kept thinking of all the things that could go wrong. And I do remember the scariest moment was the night before the first presentation we did in Hong Kong. We were in this big kind of like stadium type place, I don't know, theater, whatever you want to call it. And they were doing audio tests and lighting. And they were like, Michael, can you come up here? We're going to do an audio test. And they mic'd me up. They put the lights on me and I stood in front of this empty theater. And they were testing the audio and I just looked out at the sea of empty chairs. And my gut just dropped. I was just like, oh my God, what did I get myself into? Why did I agree to this? This is crazy. So it was so scary. And you know what's funny? At the end of when I had to go on the next day, I went up. I can't have a script and look at it because I'm dyslexic. I can't really read on the spot like that. I went up there and I just did my presentation. I just shared a bunch of time lapse. I shared a bunch of photos. I talked about what I wanted to talk about. The words just kind of came out. Like, I looked at this sea of people and kind of acted like it was only five people or friends. And I just said all the things that I would say if I was sitting right here with you chatting about photography. I just said all the things that I wanted to say. And I remember I got off the stage and I went to Russell and I was just like, what happened? Did I do okay? And he's like, you did great. I was like, I don't remember anything I just said. And I was, you know what? Out of a lot of the things I've done, I'd say that's the thing that I'm the most proud of, because that was overcoming, I think, my biggest fear in life. And wow. I'm not saying, I think if I went up and did a presentation in front of that many people right now, I would be really terrified. But just doing that experience was so huge for me. That was like, I can't even tell you. So anyways, projects wise, I'm definitely proud of those. But just if I'm looking to one thing in my career that I've been really, really proud of, it, it'd probably be that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I can say, you know, I've seen, you know, with what we do, hundreds of photography presentations, and the time-lapse presentation you gave this morning was just spot on and one of the best I've seen. You know, it was just the combination of being entertaining and inspiring, and we just learned so much from it. So,
thank you so much.
I don't know if it all clicked that one day or whatever, but you're a great, not just a great photographer, but a great teacher. So thank you very much for doing all this. MichaelShaneBloom.com. What's your Instagram? Where else can we find you?
Instagram is just Shane Bloom Photography. So my last name in photography. And then YouTube, if you just pop my name into YouTube, you'll find me over there. And I'm making a bunch of videos and hopefully more in the future. And thank you so much for having me on the podcast, man.
Thanks
this is
for
awesome.
Doing this. It's been great to meet you and get to do all this. But we're here in Menorca, Spain, and you got to teach tonight. You're leading a group tonight, and then you're teaching tomorrow, leading groups tomorrow. And I think it's time for siesta, right? I mean, we're in Spain.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Sleep deprivation this trip, but it's a blast.
It's time. All right. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Right. Thank you.
F8, The Photographer's Perspective is hosted by me, Chris Smith, and produced by Out of Chicago. A special thanks to all photographers that share their inside knowledge to make this possible. We release a new episode each week, so be sure to subscribe to the show wherever podcasts are found. To learn more about Out of Chicago and upcoming events, go to outofchicago.com. Subscribe to our mailing list to stay connected and be the first to know of our next new location where you can shoot side by side with the pros.